Application number 16730, Mr. F. Harrison, Reel 3.
Mr. Harrison, Reel 3. Amongst your leisure activities, what time you had at night after you'd done your normal day's work, was gambling going on in the barrack rooms or billets?
Well, there might be an odd card game, that's all, but, you know, nothing big.
Was it frowned upon by the army, do you know?
Pardon?
Was it frowned upon, gambling?
Always. Especially an NCO playing with privates. More so. I didn't like your gambling, but there wasn't much money. I don't think that they bothered much at all. Pennies and all, nothing.
How did you keep the billets clean?
Oh, there was always billet orderlies. You're responsible for that billet. You ought to keep it clean. You didn't get anybody in to do it for you. It was your turn. You did it. Or told you, billet orderlies.
And was that a full day?
No. You got the billet and then you go back onto your duties after. You might miss something on a morning or once everybody had got out on different parades, then you ought to sort out, sweep up or maybe mop out or whatever. And you have lotion. So it was all well worked out.
And this would presumably be inspected regularly?
Oh, yes. Oh, they used to come round, and they're looking round at the billets all the time.
If anyone had not come up to scratch in any way and there was a punishment situation, what kind of punishment might they be given?
Well, they'd just give them some fatigues of some sort, which, you know, really just fill the time in. Well, I never got any of them like that. But there's only odd ones. There was nothing serious. No, they were all right.
Was this period Eshwin basic training?
Yeah. Oh, very basic.
You hadn't got into field training?
Oh, no. We didn't get that. Well, we knew what it was when we got to the battalion. They just warmed us up, that's all.
How long were you Eshwinning?
About 3 months.
Do you recall the date that you moved from Eshwinning to...
About the end of September. Near the end of September.
How did you get the news that you were moving to a certain battalion?
Oh, it was like came round on orders, like what you know. Then the corporal and the sergeant that came round told us that you'd be moving. Yeah.
So where did you go?
Bridlington. I went to Bridlington.
To join.
The 2nd ALI. Now the 2nd ALI, it came out of Dunkirk, and they came to Huddersfield. Well below strength. Well below strength, and they were reinforced by the RSF, the Royal Scots Fusiliers, quite a lot of them, at Huddersfield. Then that part of the battalion came into Bridlington, and we joined them at Bridlington. And there were some heavy raids going on at that time, and we weren't long before we got initiated.
We'll come to that.
Yeah.
What was the reception like when you got to Bridlington? Where were you going to? What was it? Camp?
Well, we're on parade. The whole draft was on parade, and they were calling the names out. Well, they called out Lance Corporal Harrison. Well, I didn't. I just ignored it. Because I'm private. Nobody answered. I said, well, I'm Harrison. He said, what's your name? Is it? Frank, why do you answer your name? Because I said, I don't know, I'm a corporal. Do you not look at orders? you know, you got all this like, well, I fell foul of him straight away. Well, it was all right. And then we sorted out into different companies. Well, I went to C Company. I went to C Company at first. And all the lads went different places. We all got split up into different units. And we're in like civvy, you know, civvy houses, vacant houses. That's what we're living in. Maybe rooms like this, you'd have maybe eight of you sleeping in a room like this. And all the gear, you know, it was all right. No carpets, of course, no carpets on the floor. But it was all right at Breed. And we used to do, get turned for guards there on the front in pillarboxes, and it was cold. Because there's no windows, they were just all built with sandbags. Different openings in there, and you also have to mark down everything, the wind, any plane or ship or anything you saw, you put down. You were there 48 hours and 48 off, and then you used to fetch your food and everything, you know. It's cold.
But was the beach mined and wired?
Yes, it was mined and wired right up a place called Dane's Dyke. In fact, there's a colonel and a brigadier who trod on the mines. They went up there. They were killed up there. The front was all wire on the sands and that. Because it was said it was a vulnerable part of the coast. Now, there was no defence whatsoever. Doesn't matter what came in, there was nothing there to stop it. That long pole sticking out of haystacks and all sorts, all make believe. And all we had at that time was akak, was Bren guns at that time on tripods. That's some fun there. And you still did your parades and everything else, you know, you still did your training and everything.
Was this still in streets and things? You didn't have a parade ground?
No. Sometimes you also, like, there was a place where you could get down on the front, and you used to go on the sands. And most of RSM there called Lackenby. I don't know if you've heard of him or not. Well, I think he finished up a colonel. Straight as a die. Lackenby, slim fella. But, I think he hated privates and, you know, young soldiers. He used to get us on the beach at times, and they were marching us. They'd go, march till your heart's float. You're marching towards the sea. And you don't stop. If your feet's getting wet, you don't stop. March till your heart's float. You both turn. If you're halfway up your leg or something, you go, it's a brute. But he must have been a wonderful soldier, like, I mean, like, to make colonel, like. I don't know, he'll be dead now.
Come, you said you were living in houses.
Yeah.
In rooms, of course, that are being cleared. What were you sleeping on?
Oh, just on the floor. Just on the floor there. Just like palliasses, just the same. There was no beds, anything like that. And it was all right. I mean...
Had the food improved from your training...
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was a bit better. It was a bit better down there. Well, of course, we got more used to it. And
was that in another building, the cookhouse?
Northern. Yeah. Yes, that's right. There was like a... It was some sort of hall where you used to go to. It was... it wasn't too bad.
And you'd have the routine of keeping the place clean in the usual way.
Oh, you had to do that. Especially being in government, it was somebody's property. You know, whether they'd sold it to the government or not, I don't know. Like, but, they came round and they made sure places did get damaged. I mean, everybody's not the same. But, it wasn't too bad at Bridlington.
You continue your training, because you wouldn't be considered fully trained yet.
Oh, no, no, we still carried on training. We're still marching and we're still drill, you know, rifle drills and all sorts. And we were doing route marches and the marches got longer and longer. And if anybody was dropping out, there was a cross went against back to Brunsbeth. And this went on for months, wading men out. And Colonel V, I don't know whether you've heard of him or not. I don't know how to spell that name because I want to mention him. In is it with a? I think it's with a W. W E I E H E. Is that? I thought that was it, but I knew it was a W for the V A. And I don't think he was in the best of health, but by organizer, and he must have had, you know, the whole program for the whole battalion. And we used to go around by a little place called Carnaby, round Parade. We used to march round there. We sometimes used to, all your gear, weapons and all. Used to, you know, if you're anti-tank rifle, you'll carry all them, and you bring guns and everything. Used to go around. Anybody dropping out, bad feet, anything, Brunsbeth. Chester, you waded them out and waded them out till they had a battalion. They said, right, that's it. And we were trained. And I joined the mortar platoon in early 41.
Before we come to that, we could look at the training. You've mentioned the way of marching and so forth, yeah, and getting rid of people who weren't coming up the scratch. This was an old, the 2nd Battalion was an old regular battalion.
Oh, yes, yes.
And you would still have men in who had been in France.
Oh yes, there was still one or two had been in France.
How did they relate to you? Because they were regular soldiers who had been in action and you were young and conscripts.
Why, most of them were very helpful. They give you all the help, you know, they never looked down on you, they said, or, you know, anything like that. They didn't try to make you look small, anything like that. They were, I would say the majority were helpful. Oh, yes.
Did they scare you with the stories of blood and thunder?
I wouldn't say that. Like, they said, it had been awful. And especially Dunkirk had been awful. And, of course, they had terrific casualties. There's only about, I think it was only about 99 came back. I mean, some were taken prisoner, of course. But a lot had been killed and all. But, and they didn't embark on telling us these horror stories much at all. No, they were very helpful. There were some good blokes among them, old soldiers.
Because they already had their VC.
Aye, Anad. Aye. I wheeled his buttman back in a barra. His photo was an echo this morning.
So the training obviously went on and you were increasing your marching distances.
Yeah.
Your weapon training, were you coming into contact now with more weapons?
Yes.
And a variety of
anti-tank
weapons?
Anti-tank rifles, Bren guns was there.
What was the anti-tank rifle like?
Oh, it was a useless thing. I mean, it was an infantry weapon, .5. I mean, the normal tanks were would bounce back at you. You know, the hopeless thing, but it always had to go. They had 2-inch mortars, but that's all right for close range. You know, you carry that about in your hand.
Bren guns, you said?
Oh, I had the Bren guns, yeah. Because start learning how to use a Bren gun. Because I was on guard one night. I was on one of these tripods with, shooting it up, having to go at these planes that used to come in. And we used to see these Whitleys of ours, the old Whitleys, coming back over Britain. And you could see the holes through them. Through there. Oh, they got back here, I don't know. And oh, dear me. Oh, it must have been awful for them lads in the Air Force.
The Bren gun, you say you learnt all about it. Did you have to dismantle it?
Oh, yes. Oh, you learnt to do that with the eyes shut. dismantle it, take it, and put it together again. There was the competition, so it could go the fastest. You know, it was a good gun. Marvellous gun. There was only one fault with the Bren gun. Too accurate. I mean, if a bloke got hit with a Bren gun, he got hit with about 20 shots. I mean, you know, if it just had a bigger cone of fire, it would have been a better gun altogether. Because it was nice and, you know, you could carry it about. And, you know, it was a good gun to have. And then we started getting Tommy guns with the pans and the clips that goes in, you know. My memory's gone of these things. But we handled them and the useless. They were useless because they were always jamming. You know, there was always stoppages on, and you can't afford things like that. And it didn't last long. We got the Sten guns, like. The Sten guns were, I mean, you could toss that in a pole of clay, anything, and lift it out and it would fire. You could drop it on the ground and it would fire. So it was just the same with a Tommy gun. Oh, the stoppages, it used to be terrible.
Two-inch mortars, you were saying, are useful, close range.
This like ones. Right. But they were all right. You'd drop it in a crowd of paper, like, it would do some damage. But it was light. You could carry it about, you know, which you have to, you should do with mortars. You should move around. You don't want to be static.
Were they telling you at this time, because, as I say, some men already had experience ago, of course, but were they telling you this time of the German soldier and the weaponry that he had?
Yeah, especially mortars. They had a wonderful mortar, and they had another gun called the priest gun, and that, I think that was on the tank, like he says, a fearsome weapon, that. But their mortars, he says, they were right accurate, and some of them were bigger than ours. I think they had a four inch, something like that, and ours was a 3 inch, but that might be a good mortar, eh? But they were always on about these priest guns and their mortars were very good.
Other than the weapons that we've just touched on, and the other training that was going on, we would be continuing bayonet training?
Yeah, oh yes, I'd got more serious, you know.
This is where you said you had your gas training going into a chamber. How did that happen? How did that go?
Well, there were players sailed there, and you just march in, and you just march, it was only like tear gas, I mean, it was nothing else. And you march around, you go without a respirator first, just to get around it, and then out. And then another time, you'd drop something and go in with your respirator. And maybe just let you walk around the table a couple of times and then on the way out. It was just to give you an idea of what it's like. You did not make your eyes water.
Must have been very uncomfortable.
But it was part of the train. And we've got the gas capes. We're fully rigged out then, like, you know, the steel helmet and the rod.
And you now had your 303?
Yeah, well, I went the Lee Enfield then. That was nice. A shorter bayonet.
You went to C Company. Who was commanding?
Captain Allen.
What was he like?
Smashing blow. He got killed. First action, I think it was the first action in Cayman. He got killed, Mr. Allen, Robert Allen. Nice fellow, nice bloke. He was a gentleman, I mean, he was no... And then there was a Sergeant Major was CSM Brooks, where he finished up RSM. His photo's on the, I'll show you them sometime if you want. And he was the first Sergeant Major I had in the battalion. And he finished up as a regimental Sergeant Major. He was a regular soldier, a bit naughty, like. But do what you're told. We're all right. Good company.
Your platoon in C Company, what was that?
C Company. It was just infantry company. That was all. There was no special.
You weren't given a platoon to
go to in the company?
There was three platoons and like a little headquarter thing, you know. What?
Did the platoon you're in have a number to designate it?
No. What? I don't know the number of my platoon.
Platoon commander.
I wasn't in long.
But platoon commander. Do you remember who he was? Platoon commander. Do you remember?
Norden. Fairbairn. Fairbairn was one. In say company. Now, I knew there was quite a few of the RSF in there as well. I knew quite a few of them.
Did you feel at this point that you'd gone through your initial training, you were now into training with your company and your battalion, did you feel that what you were being taught stood you in good stead later on?
It was relevant? Yes. Oh, it all come into place. I mean, as I say, we went out, we're marching, they went longer and longer. And we're still 30 miles, once a mile, 30. I mean, and the band used to meet us to march us back in.
And would that be the light infantry piece coming back in?
Well, we used to come in and. But at that time, we fit battalion. When it got rid of the weak links. Got rid of all those and then say it was a great battalion. It was.
Field training, which you now were having experience of.
Yeah.
What kind of training was that? What was happening?
Well, we were always attacking airfields and we're going out in the wagons and maybe you're out a full day, maybe. Sometimes you're about 2 or 3 days and you just live as you could. You know, there was always umpires. There was always umpires and you scattered around. But we're always taking Driffield, Airfield. it was part of the train.
Was it the old First World War style of lines of men moving towards an objective, or was it fire and movement, or what form did it take?
No, it was all, that particular time, it was all spread out. You were never in a bunch. You always spread out and, like, one side maybe more than that, and then there's somebody behind you. You always had somebody back up. And once we were on a scheme in what we're on Doncaster Racecourse, and we built it, camped there. On there, we're out about 4 or 5 days, and you had your field kitchens, and it must be all right, as long as the weather was all right. Oh, you just enjoy it. I was one of those games. I was at a section with me, and this is when I went into Mora, so I might be a bit before my time. And the section was in the wagon, and we're going along, and the wagon took fire. So I got my section out. I said, "Get out, jump out, and at the back." As I jumped. Camouflage net come round. As I jumped, it was a fire. Well, I burnt about my face and hair, my arms. And I went into hospital. I think it was Beverly. I think it was Beverly Hospital. And the CEO came and he got the ambulance and took us to Beverly. I think it was Beverly. And they sprayed us nearly every 2 hours just for this stuff. And but it was marvellous. I mean, at the finish, they were just shoving it off, I said, "They're all right." I was lucky. And then while that was happening, the ammunition was going off, the 303s, it was like bonfire night.
Yes, there must have been accidents in training.
Yeah. You get them.
Were you using live ammunition and...
We used to carry it like that, but we didn't use it on the skin, I mean, there was proper places, like Salisbury Plains and different places where you could go and work with tanks and use live ammunition.
I was going to ask you if you worked with other arms of the services.
Yeah, yeah.
Tanks, artillery?
Oh, yes, yes. I worked with artillery.
Did you get any experience of working with the RAF at all?
No, not really. No, not at that time. Like, I mean, I think you wouldn't get any work, not work, we got into action, I think, you know. We didn't get much training at all with them.
You say you went into mortars?
I went into the mortars from there.
You were a lance corporal at this time?
Yeah.
How did that come about? Were you just shifted in, or did you
volunteer? They were just forming them up. I think, I don't know whether just had one mortar, two mortars. Well, they got the full complement of six mortars. And I don't know whether my name come out or what for, I don't know. But I went, and there was a few more lads, some out of A Company and different company, you know. And Martin McLean was there, he was PSM. PSM, he was. And
Platoon Sergeant Major.
Mm-hmm. And we started learning how to mount the mortar with the base plate and the barrel and the tripod and everything. And your sights had two bubbles in, one for elevation, one for, you know, the horizontal. And everything that you showed you how to do, it was a nice piece of equipment, the sights, putting the bar, it was all right. And then you learnt all about the bombs, how they worked and everything else. And
how did the bombs work? Obviously, the different types of bombs for different situations.
Oh, yes. So, the mortar bombs we had, it had to travel 200 yards before it came active. It had to travel that, so the force, it was to force the domes in it, and it released something. That traveled down a side shoot, and onto a detonator. It was alive then. As soon as that touched anything, touched leaves, water, anything, would explode.
And that was at 200 yards or thereabouts?
Yeah, 200. As soon as it went 200 yards, that bomb was live. And it was the same, phosphorus bombs, where they just explode, like.
So you had phosphorus bombs, are you saying?
Yeah.
What are the types?
Well, I like for smoke, you know, smoke. Phosphorus and that, yeah.
Mm. And the other type of bombs?
HA.
High explosive.
Yeah. Mm.
Did you have any other type of bomb other than those two?
No, that's all we had. That's all we had. Mm.
And what distance could it be effective over?
Oh, 1,700 yards. I think that would be about the minimum, mine, for a 3-inch mortar, but the maximum for it. And there was a minimum, maybe about 200 yards or maybe 150 yards, otherwise your barrel would be straight up. And you always had to be wary that you had plenty of cover. You know, stay clear of any trees, anything. And I've known misfires. No, they are, but you had no fear. But some lads used to run. I says, why, pointless running. I says, it's not going to go off. And it used to go down the barrel and stop there. Because there's a plunger in the bottom of the barrel, like, you know. So you just uncouple the barrel and just tip it up, out comes the shell.
Pretty nerve-wracking, though.
Oh, they went first. You got a bit bit jumpy, but when you got to know the workings of the bomb and everything else, you don't want to, they got used to that. They never used to run, they just took it up, tip it out.
But what was the firing technique, in the sense of did you aim to scatter your bombs or concentrate in an area?
There was a plan worked there, but this was later on. They could fire it like artillery. We fire six mortars on one target, and just by range in one mortar. You all had, you put your marker off to aim onto, because you have your sights to adjust and everything else, and you've still got that in line with your target. So this first mortar would range. If he's too far, if he was 100 yards on side of the target, it was down 100. Now all the other five, they would do the same, and they were all ranged parallel. So this gun be on that target, they'd be a mile away off the target, because they were all parallel. Now when they finished ranging, they might have dropped one to the west or to the east. If you do, you want to go so many degrees to the right or so many degrees to the left. He adjusted his sights. Then this chart he had, they worked it out. He said, right, number two gun, you want to be this way a little bit. Three gun, a little bit this further. Right to the fifth, the sixth mortar. And when they were finished, all the six guns were on that one target.